When I started 27 years ago, we had just come out of really being called personnel. So when you I started in November 1997 in HR. And so if you go back into the mid-90s, it really wasn't called human resources, or it was just starting to be called human resources, and it was really the personnel department. It was really more of a record keeping, administrative, let's say, compliance function. I think over the last 3 decades, the HR discipline has come a long, long way as a business partner, as a trusted advisor.
Hello, and welcome to the Future Proof HR Podcast. Join us as we explore the trends shaping the future of HR and the way we work. I'm your host, Thomas Kunjapu, founder and CEO of Cleary. And today I'm thrilled to welcome Quentin Meisenheimer, Chief People Officer at Garlock Flexibles. Quentin brings decades of HR leadership experience guiding organizations through transformation and growth. His journey from military service to corporate HR has equipped him with unique perspectives on leadership, workforce development, and adapting to the ever-changing world of work. So without further ado, Quentin, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm excited to be here. Appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. I'd love to start at the beginning a little bit and learning a little bit about your transition from the military into HR. It's pretty fascinating. Could you just walk us through how that happened?
Sure. Yeah. I went to West Point, graduated in 1989, and spent 5 years in the Army active duty. And then in 1994, made a decision with a young family that I was going to transition out of military service. The challenge that I faced really was, what was I going to do? So I knew I had skills and abilities I'd developed in college and in the Army, but I wasn't exactly sure how they would translate out in the world beyond the military. That honestly was my struggle. And so I tried a couple sales roles early, commissioned sales, and quickly with a young family decided that probably wasn't the right vehicle for me. And then I had a friend of mine in my West Point network who was a production manager at a manufacturing company and needed a third shift supervisor. And so he reached out to me and said, "Hey, how about thinking about this role?" And the one thing I knew I could do, Thomas, was lead a team. And so I went through the process, pretty detailed process, and was fortunate enough to get an opportunity to be a third shift manufacturing distribution supervisor. So I took that opportunity. And my charter in that role was to build a shift year round. It was a seasonal shift. So literally, I went in on Monday to the HR office, didn't even know what HR stood for, and filled out a bunch of paperwork to get benefits from my family and get paid. And then on Tuesday night, I was on my shift at 10 o'clock at night. So I had an 11 p.m. to 7 a.m. shift, Sunday night to Thursday night, overtime on Friday nights. And I had one hourly lead and 20 hourly manufacturing teammates. And that's how I started. So I made it to HR because I spent a year building that shift from 20 people to 120 people with 40 temps. And so I was in the HR office every morning. I was hiring, I was interviewing, I was doing progressive discipline, I was terminating. We were promoting people, we were developing people, we were doing everything we could, and we built a great shift. And in my first performance review, my boss asked me whether I'd be interested in working in HR. That particular plant was co-located with the division headquarters for a picture frame division of Newell Company at the time. And the VP of HR was looking for an HR manager for that facility that would support the division headquarters, the field sales force, somebody that was degreed, relocatable, could be promotable in the Newell culture. And so they gave me a chance to interview, and I did. And I went after that opportunity because I saw HR as an opportunity to make a difference. I knew how that HR team impacted my ability to build that shift in my first year, and I saw it as an opportunity to make a difference. So that's how I transitioned into HR.
So you saw how central that function was for you in your first role in an organization as a manager, effectively, right? And so you're trained into that value a little bit, right? By the constant interactions. And I wonder how many people actually have positive interactions like that with HR in their first kind of roles as a function, which then is something that they take forward going into what they want to do next. So that's interesting, Quentin. So in that first role, post-military, you're effectively a manager, like leading not just a shift, a whole retail branch operation. And you quickly learned how much of the success there had to do with all types of things that were human resources related. And you had a great interaction with an HR department that you were collaborating with constantly. And that was a great experience, right? Which set a seed, it sounds like, to go in that direction in the future. I think that's fascinating. I wanted to call that out because often, like, employees, if not leaders, tend to have negative perceptions of the human resources department, right? And I think it just goes to show how much of an impact a particular person or a department and an experience can have on the future trajectory of anyone else, right?
Yeah, I completely agree. I took the opportunity because I saw it as an opportunity to make a difference. And really, making a difference is the tagline that I use with our HR teams, because I believe that if we do it right, the HR team should be in the middle of just about everything going on, touches every part of the organization, and we should be able to have a very positive influence, helping managers overcome obstacles and achieve results, but helping employees be seen, heard, valued, appreciated, make sure that communication throughout the organization is effective and meaningful.
Was there something, those early interactions that you can like remember or put a specific point to that made you think, wow, this person or this department is really helping me meet my needs, like what I need to do in my role, that left that positive impression with you? Because at some level, that's the dynamic. I know we talked in the pre-call about being a trusted advisor and a service provider for
right,
the business leaders that you're working with, right? And it seems like as a customer, you experience that in a very positive way, at least in that moment, right?
So again, I took a shift from working through the night, which is a special group of people that are willing and able to work through the night when everybody else is sleeping. And I had to build that shift from 20 to 160 people. So everything I did needed HR involvement, whether it was posting a job, whether it was setting up interview schedules, whether it was promoting people, progressive discipline. What do you do if somebody didn't show up or there's a discipline issue? Everything that I needed to do really involved HR support. That team was there early in the morning. They worked tirelessly to support me and help me build the shift. They paid us, right? So they made sure everybody got paid appropriately and on time. They made sure everybody had benefits and took care of their families. And so it didn't take me long to realize how important that team was. And honestly, in that role, it was a plant manufacturing shift role that I was in. Little did I really understand at that point all of the other things that team did. When I became the manager of that team a year later, we were supporting a division headquarters with 200 employees. It was totally different, very white collar, right? Senior professionals, executives to entry-level professionals, support folks. And then we had sales professionals in 40 states across the country. We had a lot going on. And so I had even more respect for that team once I led the team and really understood the scope of support that that team provided to over 1,200 people. So pretty neat.
You actually also talked about how the one thing you knew a little bit about was leadership coming out of the military, which of course, it's hard to avoid that topic, I would imagine. And yet in the corporate setting, it's a little bit different. There's maybe the command and control element. It's not as strictly hierarchical at the very least, right? Could you talk a little bit about the transitions and things that were different even within the realm of leadership?
Great. And I think one of the biggest challenges for military leaders transitioning out of the military is leadership style. So you're right. In the military, it's based on a rank structure, and the military demands respect solely based on your rank. And you have a uniform code of military justice. If you violate that respect, then you can be subject to some pretty strict disciplinary action. Outside of the military, really leadership is built on trust and respect. So as a leader in the private sector, sometimes military leaders will come out and they feel like just because they're the supervisor, just because they're the manager, people have to do what they say. That's not the real world. People actually don't necessarily feel as if they have to do what you say. And so the leaders out of the military who understand that and lead because they care about their teams and they build trust and respect for their teams and they help their teams win, those leaders are the most effective. The leaders that come out of the military and they try to lead by pure authority don't typically do very well. Or if they have success, they're behind the scenes, probably not respected very well. That's not who I wanted to be. So I've always been a leader, even in the military, right? Where I cared about my people first and I put the team results ahead of whatever my personal goals and really focused on being the best I could be in the job I have at the time, build my team, build a high performing team, because that's what I get paid to do as a leader.
Right.
And help them win. If I can help them win, if I can take good care of them, if I can coach them, develop them, mentor them, clear obstacles for them and help them do what they need to do every day, ultimately, that's going to bode well for me too.
So then let's talk a little bit about the role of HR itself as you've come to understand it, execute on it, lead within it, and across many different organizations. I think you've already mentioned the concept of being a trusted advisor,
right,
to the business and to leadership, but also being a service provider. So could you just tell me a little bit of how you've honed in on your philosophy of what a great HR team really is all about?
Yeah, so I actually got some great advice in my career from somebody that I feel is a strong mentor for me. And he said, Quentin, there are two things you need to focus on. One, you need to learn the business. You need to understand what we do, how we do it, and why we do it that way, so you understand the full context of what we're doing. And two, you need to build relationships. The business likes you because of your background. We think you can do really well here. But at the end of the day, you've got to build relationships by spending time with leaders and peers, understanding the world through their eyes, their perspective, and serving them. And through serving them, build trust, build respect, and they'll listen to you. And they'll seek your advice and seek your counsel, and you'll be able to do great things. So I think my vision of HR is that we are a trusted advisor. We're positioned so that we are doing everything we can to try to support the business in whatever way they need us to. I like to align my HR team to the business. So however the business is structured, I like to align my team to the business structure so that leaders have a clear view of who their HR business partner is. And that HR business partner's responsibility is to embed themselves in that team. And the measure of success that I like to use is, does that team feel like you're part of their team? Or does that team feel like you're part of my team? So does the business feel like you're part of the business team, or does the business feel like you're part of Quentin's HR team? Oh. And the definition of success is we want the business to feel like you're part of their team. So we want to position ourselves so that our leaders, our peers do want our opinion. They want our perspective. I really believe our job is to help leaders overcome obstacles, honestly, and deliver results and take care of our most precious asset, our people. And so when I talk about being a trusted advisor, that's what I talk about. Now, a key part of that is to build that trust, to earn that trust, you have to provide excellent service. That's what we are. We're a customer service organization that supports leaders and employees. So we need to be good listeners. We need to understand what the challenges are, where people need help, and we need to be responsive. We need to respond quickly with a purpose. We need to take care of issues, not let things stay in limbo or linger. We need to help the organization communicate as effectively as possible with the workforce and try to live in the proactive world more than the reactive world. There's a certain part of HR that's always reactive, But if all you do is live in the reactive world of HR, it's actually not a very fun place to be. So if you can be proactive and anticipate the needs of the business, the needs of the workforce, and be in that proactive world more than the reactive world, it's just a better place to be. That's how I like to approach it from a trusted advisor and service provider standpoint. I tell whatever HR team I'm a part of, we are service providers. So we need to be responsive. We need to be diligent, detailed. We need to follow up. We need to communicate well. We need to listen well. We need to solve problems.
Yeah, and I like how you're measuring that ultimately if a business partner on your team is successful is if they're perceived to be a part of that particular team versus your team. The first thing that comes to mind for me there is like co-location, right? If the whole company's in one headquarters, even there, I think this applies, right? So I would imagine it follows that you would want your business partner sitting with that leader or that core team versus sitting where you are, if that was a choice. And does that also mean in a distributed world, think about those roles being attached at the hip in some ways, like the business partner along with the leader physically where they're at?
Yeah, I think in an ideal world, the co-location is what you want. One of the things I think COVID taught us is through the use of technology like this video technology, you don't always have to be in the same location. You don't always have to be necessarily in that office. And so if businesses can learn how to strike the right balance there, you can hire talented people that may not live in the same city as the leader, depending on what your business model is, but they can still be effective partners. Now, part of that is they got to spend time together. You can't just do it all virtually. I do think you need to be face-to-face. You need to be in meetings together. You need to travel together if travel is required, because that's part of the way you get to know each other and you build trust and rapport. But I'll tell you that since COVID, I've been successful in hiring folks that didn't necessarily have to be in the exact same city as the business leader. Depends on the business model.
Well, your metric of success doesn't account for that. Do you feel that you're part of that team or not, right? That can happen through a multitude of different modalities, to your point.
That's right.
Thinking about just COVID, but more generally, kind of look forward, thinking about how the world of work, and if we're being trusted advisors and great service providers to leadership teams, what is demanded of an HR department in the future? Is it shifting? Is it different? And if so, how can we best prepare for that?
So I think it's absolutely shifting. When I started 27 years ago, we had just come out of really being called personnel. So I started in November 1997 in HR. And so if you go back into the mid-90s, it really wasn't called human resources, or it was just starting to be called human resources. And it was really the personnel department.
Yeah.
It was really more of a record-keeping, administrative, let's say, compliance function. I think over the last three decades, the HR discipline has come a long, long way as a business partner, as a trusted advisor. But yeah, I think there's even more being asked for. When COVID came along in 2020, 2021, whether you wanted to be in the center of the storm or not as an HR professional, you were, because no one around you, to include you, had ever experienced a global pandemic. No one really knew what to do or how to do it. And because it had to do with employee health, the HR person was thrown into the center of the storm, and it was an opportunity. And I think the HR function took advantage of the opportunity and did great work. It was really hard, but I think HR professionals did a magnificent job of helping business leaders make good and prudent decisions, protect the workforce, protect the business, and get things done in an environment that nobody had ever faced. And I think going forward, to your point, we're always being asked to do more with less. How do you get more out of technology? Where do we really need to focus? The workforce around us is changing significantly. So as HR leaders, we're expected to understand those dynamics and guide the business on prudent adjustments that we need to make on how we handle our existing workforce, how we transition knowledge from experienced workers to newer workers, and how we handle the generational differences. Culture is big. HR leaders, people leaders are being asked to help be stewards of the culture. Culture really starts at the top. CEO owns culture, in my opinion, but certainly the executive leadership team also has ownership in the culture. And it's typically the HR leader that then goes front and center to try to make sure everybody's heading in the same direction when it comes to culture. A lot of change management. So HR has taken a big lead, I'd say, in the last 10, 15 years in big, large organizational changes and change management, for sure. But the world around us it's changing. The business world's changing. And if businesses aren't able to adapt to the changes around us, then they're going to get caught flat-footed. And I think the HR folks are in the center of the storm to try to help make sure the business is making prudent changes in a timely manner.
I get all that as like where things are headed. And yet I know that a lot of HR professionals might be stuck in this reactive mode often, right? Because yes, you want to be a trusted advisor and you want to be able to make an impact on the business. And ideally, you have the context and the competence to do that. But often for a lot of folks who come into the function, the work goes back to the benefits org, right? Or the personnel org, where what you actually need to do is process, execute, focus on logistics, do what you're told, right? And be reactive. What would you say? Is that still just going to be a part of what the role is going forward? It's just that maybe it's a smaller chunk, or is that more of a mindset difference as you look in towards the future?
So one of the things I love about HR is there are a lot of different aspects. So I'm really what most people would call an HR generalist. I've really been in HR leadership roles my entire career. But there are a lot of roles in HR that are specialist roles. Just think about it. Payroll, benefits, leave of absence management. Some people make a career of employee relations specifically. Mm-hmm. You've got retirement plans, right? So you have some people that are pension 401k experts. You've got labor. Some people have an expertise in handling unions and union negotiations and grievances and all the things that go with that. Some people are experts in union avoidance, communications. There's a lot to it. That's one of the things I really like about HR. My career may be a little bit different because of my leadership experience and how I navigated, but I've coached lots of people as an HR professional about early career. A lot of times you are in an individual contributor role and you are getting a lot of guidance on how to do your job, what you need to do. But those are opportunities to learn, and you can be proactive even in an individual contributor role. Once you really understand what the requirements are, what the expectations are from your leader, you have full permission to master that and go above and beyond. And with most leaders, you have full permission to bring creative new ideas. Once you've shown that you understand the role that you're in and you understand the business, if you have a creative idea, most leaders will be open to that. And you can set yourself apart that way. And so we all have to build a foundation somewhere. There's a reactive nature to being an individual contributor, but you can also flip the script. I had a division president one time who said something in a town hall meeting that always stuck with me. He said, you don't have to lead people to be a leader. You don't have to have authority a leader. You can be proactive and creative and bring ideas and you can work hard. There are a lot of things you can do as an individual contributor. And if you're interested in being a leader, then companies will identify that and they'll work with you on that. And they'll eventually give you an opportunity to become a leader. And again, I think it's all about trying to anticipate what the needs of the business are, anticipate what the needs of your team are. When you're a leader, it's about really getting to know your team and putting them first ahead of yourself, being a selfless leader. Not everybody's willing to do that though, Thomas. That's the unfortunate thing. Some people come to work and they just want to work and they don't really want to go above and beyond. They don't really want to bring any creativity. That's just not how they're wired. some people are thrown into leadership positions who really don't want to be a leader, but they're kind of forced into it. I have a passion around that as an HR professional because I always look for the win-win. Who has the skill and ability to be a leader and the will or desire to be a leader? If you have the skill and the will, that's a win-win. That's who we want to go after. We don't want to put people in leadership positions who don't want to lead. We do that a lot in sales. You try to take your best salesperson and put them in as the sales leader. That typically doesn't work. It might be the third or fourth best performer on the sales team that's the best sales leader.
It's a different competency, right?
Different competency. And so I think the challenge that I have seen in the workforce in the last 10, 15 years is, you know, when I was coming along and I was in my early roles in HR, I understood that I was going to need to be in those roles a while to build some experience and a depth of understanding of what's really required in the role. And I had some great division HR leaders who really mentored me well. And I was patient. It's a little harder, I think, today to try to coach folks along those lines and tell them, hey, I'm going to put you in this role, but I'm going to need you in this role for 2 years, maybe 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
There is a feeling that, hey, with technology and this and that, I'm super bright. You know, I can do this job for a year and then I'm ready for the job. And we can certainly do that, but I didn't get to where I got to in my HR career because I just did a job a year and just kept moving. I sat in jobs for multiple years and had the opportunity to make mistakes, learn from those mistakes, be accountable for those mistakes, and really learn and build expertise and experience, and then take that as a foundation and move on to the next role at a time that made sense. And that's probably the biggest challenge that I see right now is finding folks that are willing to be patient, willing to take the time to get that depth of knowledge in whatever role they're in to prepare them for the next role. And if we don't do that right, people get promoted ahead of their skill set. They get in over their head and they make decisions that are not great for the business, and they're not held accountable for them because they've been moved on before they can actually sit and be accountable for the decisions they've made. And so it's a balance that you have to strike between business needs and individual desires.
Yeah, that's obviously a dynamic, right? That the average tenure has gone down in across all roles, across all functions, across all industries over the last like couple of decades. But the other, I guess, thing that driving it, or like the counterpoint, is that folks know that the industry that they're in or the function that they're in is changing fast, right? So the skills that they need to develop and the kind of questions they need to be able to answer with their competency is changing faster than maybe any particular role or any particular, possibly even organization, but probably let's say like role for this discussion can actually accommodate. And so that like leads to this theoretically wandering eye for the best performers who are looking to keep things sharp. What would you say to someone like that, where they're on your team, they're constantly introspective, curious about the business, about their skill sets, they're looking to improve, and that impatience is driven from that, as opposed to, let's say, a generic, you know, I'm trying to make 20% more in some kind of role this next year because I just need it?
So I think it's really important, no matter, we can take HR. So for my team, it's clear to outline what the scope of responsibility really is at the next level job that you're talking about. And what's really required in that job? How is that job different from the job that you're in? What can we proactively do if you're interested in that job and we, the company, I as the leader, feel you have the skill and ability to do that? Then what are the things that we need to work on together to get you prepared to do that role? Some companies are probably really great at that, but I wouldn't say in my experience that all companies are great at that. Career pathing and really explaining to people what the gap is between where they are and where they want to be. So I think that honest communication and trying to clearly articulate, if we don't think you're ready, Thomas, here's why. But we think you can get ready and here are the skills that we need to help you develop to get ready. And part of that too is setting the expectation in the role. If you promote somebody into a leadership role, let's say they're a first time leader, you know, let's all remember back to when we were leading a team for the first time. What do? How do you set clear expectations? How do you set a vision for a team? How do you write a performance review? How do you handle someone who's not showing up for work? How do you have a tough conversation? How do you give feedback? It's easy for managers, leaders to praise their teammates. It's not as easy for them to give really constructive feedback because we're in a society where I think people are worried about somebody being offended or getting their feelings hurt. But what I've found is teammates appreciate open and honest communication. They may not always like it, but if you approach it with dignity and respect, and you're trying to help them and prepare them for success, they'll appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And so what I try to do as a leader is set clear expectations on what I expect and what the business needs for you in this role. And then if you aspire to the next level role, what does that look like? What's the gap? How do we get you ready? And let's work on together.
Got it. So maybe one last kind of area I can just want to ask you a little bit more about then before we get into the lightning round. How do you think the post-COVID like workforce dynamics have contributed to this attribute that we're talking about, right? Let's call it the general like impatience or the divergence between, maybe it's about self-awareness, but, you know, capabilities and desires and the ability for someone and an organization that actually is trying to coach and develop their folks where there's actually maybe not as much of an opportunity.
I think COVID really had an impact in a lot of areas. I think, first of all, it taught us that people can be productive working remotely versus being in the office. Mm-hmm. We went from everybody has to be in the office to nobody can be in the office. And then companies had to figure out how to start getting people back in the office. And that's an issue even now. There are companies now moving toward everybody back in the office. I'm a believer that there needs to be some flexibility, right? That we shouldn't be super rigid one way or the other. That said, communicating with folks via video technology is good. It's effective. And we learned how to do that with COVID really well. But what you miss in a team environment is being able to get the team together to eat lunch together or to get in the conference room together and have a meeting to do working sessions where you can draw on the whiteboard, move post-it notes, and you can brainstorm and be creative. That's what you miss. There was a wild swing to the folks that are earlier in their careers. They want flexibility. They love technology. They don't want to necessarily have to be in an office every day. So it's a battle. It's a struggle. So how do you strike a balance so that you do have some team building, some camaraderie, the walk down the hall and have a discussion kind of moments? At the same time, how do you give a little bit more flexibility? So I do think that the technology and the war for talent, we lost some folks in the workforce. Due to COVID, we had folks choose to retire early because they were like, you know what? I'm done financially. I can do this. I don't have to do this anymore. They lost family members or friends or brothers or sisters or moms or dad, whatever it was. And they're like, you know what? I'm going to retire. So I think we have more people retire. I think the statistics will tell you that working moms took it on the chin, if you will, in COVID because childcare needs and a lot of moms felt like they were families made the decision that moms had to kind of sacrifice a little bit in the career. Some of that's coming back now, but having two folks working is always a balance. It's always hard. And I think as far as helping people be patient, it comes back to what we just talked about. You've got to explain to folks what's really required at the next higher level. And to me, moving from individual contributor to leader of a team is a big adjustment. And how do you proactively help people prepare for that? Because until you've done it, you really don't know what it's all about.
Yeah.
Really. And so what tools and systems can you support, can you put around them to help them win? But then the adjustment from leading a team of individual contributors to leading a team of leaders is an even bigger adjustment. It's not the same. I've seen organizations struggle with that. There's an assumption that if you're a good leader, you'll be a good leader of leaders. Not necessarily.
It's another challenge.
And so, again, it's all about being able to communicate what the requirements are at the next level and try to find the win-win, who has the skill and capability and the will and the desire, and marry those together. Don't make assumptions. Sometimes people are hard-headed. They'll leave. They'll go somewhere else. And sometimes it works out for them. Sometimes it doesn't. And then they just have to learn the hard way and realize, okay, yeah, maybe I didn't know as much as I thought. Maybe
right.
I wasn't ready as I thought. And we all need a little life lesson.
Life will teach you.
Yep.
Well, thank you for going through that a little bit more in depth, because I started reading almost like a tactical guide, right? If you're a leader working with folks internally who are on your effectively creating career paths and ladders and learning opportunities for. It would be great in the instance of the folks who left and things worked out, where that happened because preceding that, you had great discussions internally where it was clear on all sides that that is the best move for them. And it was almost encouraged. Right? That would be a very emotionally intelligent and forward-looking organization. But before we go too much farther, I would love to get into our lightning round here, Quentin, and get your thoughts in 30 seconds or less on a couple of different questions I have for you. So starting with one thing, what's one HR trend you think will dominate over the next decade?
Yeah, I think it's the continuing use of technology to drive efficiency in HR processes. Doing more with less.
So transitioning out of the military into your first role, in a civilian role, what was the biggest adjustment?
Oh, gosh. If I could do it all over again, I would have been more flexible. I locked myself in geographically. I was living in Central Texas. I didn't want to leave. What I encourage folks to do now is be really open to where the opportunity is and be willing to move, so that you can get off to a good start. So that worked against me big time. And then just network, talk to as many people as you can who've done the transition ahead of you and try to learn from them in their experience and apply that for you.
So if you could wave a magic wand and improve one aspect of the HR department and how HR is practiced worldwide, what would it be?
Yeah, unfortunately, you mentioned it earlier in the podcast. Unfortunately, HR tends to be viewed as kind of Darth Vader.
That's true.
Because we're the folks that have to manage policies and progressive discipline and help terminations and all that. I'd rather we be viewed more as Yoda, somebody who is really good at what he does, can develop people, and is an elite performer.
Love it. That's a great note. As any to end on, I would say, be like Yoda. So thank you, Quentin, for this conversation and for sharing your journey and insights on, you know, leadership and the future of HR and organizations. And in general, it's invaluable to have these sorts of conversations out in the open. And I'm sure our listeners have gained a lot from it. And so to our audience, thank you for tuning in. And thank you again to Quentin. And until next time, everyone, stay future-proof out there. Hey, it's Thomas again. One quick question before you go. Are you and your HR team tired of answering the same employee questions again and again in Slack? If yes, our Cleary AI-powered Slackbot is here to help. It takes routine employee requests and answers it automatically while freeing up time for you to take on more important tasks. At the same time, it automatically builds up an HR knowledge base as you go. It's quick to set up, works right in Slack, and you can try it for free. Just head on over to gocleary.com/HR-chatbot to install it. It's again, goclearly.com/HR-chatbot. Thanks again.